This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham, and it's Politics Tuesday, Election Day 2018. And I've got Crystal Graham with me. We're going to talk some politics today on the podcast. You know, politics is like sports has a school.
Today has got to be like Christmas for Chris Graham. Not only is there an election day, but there's also UVA's basketball kickoff tonight. A lot going on here at Augusta Free Press.
Yeah, in fact, I'll be at the UVA Towson season tip-off tonight at 7 o'clock, but I'll also have one eye on the court, and I'll have one eye on election returns because polls on the East Coast start closing around 7 o'clock. And, you know, this is a year, it's not a presidential year, obviously, but there are lots of Senate races and certainly all 435 House races, and control of both chambers could be up for grabs tonight. So, yeah, and not only Virginia's basketball season tip-off, but also a lot of college basketball tonight. The Champions Classic with Duke and Kentucky, Kansas and Michigan State. So there's a lot going on today, but definitely politics is a key.
So in Waynesboro, where Augusta Free Press is based, this morning started out with pouring rain, foggy, a little bit on the cold side, but people were still getting out to vote. As of 9 a.m. in Waynesboro, the voter turnout was already at 15.2%, which I think, you know, is a little bit high. And I'm interested in your background on an off-year election when there's not a presidential race. It seems like those numbers are up.
It does. And I got numbers from Albemarle County as of 9 o'clock as well, and they had 18% turnout. And, yeah, this is not a presidential year. There is a Senate race, but it's not closely contested. Tim Kaine and Corey Stewart, that's expected to be maybe as much as a 20-point win for Tim Kaine in that race. Not really closely contested at all, even though there's so many hotly contested races across the country at the Senate level. So, and for Albemarle County, I can understand perhaps why there'd be more turnout early in the day because there is a contested congressional race. I mean, technically, yeah, there's a contested race here as well, and I'll talk about that in a second. But the race between Leslie Cockburn and Denver Riggleman in the 5th, to fill an open seat, basically. Robert Hurts, Garrison. Hurt and Garrison both in successive cycles, basically, stepping down. It's a Republican seat. Tom Perriello won it and held it for 2 years, 2009 to 2011. But that race is a nip-and-tuck race, so I can understand the Albemarle turnout being higher. But here in Waynesboro, seeing what feels like pretty good turnout in the morning, in a race for another open seat, Bob Goodlatte stepping down after 25. He'll be finishing up his 26th year in Congress in a couple of months. Ben Klein, a former staffer for Goodlatte, and then for the last 16 years a representative in the House of Delegates, Republican, reliable Republican, against a Democratic challenger, Jennifer Lewis, largely unknown. She's not really held political office. But to see that, there's interest in that race here in Waynesboro, which tends to vote Republican, not overwhelmingly, but does tend to vote Republican, at least the city of Waynesboro. Yeah, that's interesting. So I don't know what to make of that, except to say people are paying attention in an off year, which you don't always see.
So we'll break down some of the more local races here in just a minute. The sun is now shining in Waynesboro, so that should mean more people going out to the polls, especially the traditional lunchtime rush, I guess, to go vote. But, Chris, I'm interested in your perspective as a whole. Midterm elections are typically kind of like a report card on the president and how they're doing. When we look at these races nationwide, what do you expect as far as the shift in the House and the Senate?
Well, it's a rule that the president always loses in that first midterm election. The president's party loses seats in that first midterm election, especially in the House. It may not be the case in the Senate, not because of any popularity swing towards Donald Trump, but because so many of the seats that were up in the Senate, basically one-third of the seats are up every 2 years, and it staggers. And it just happens that in the cycle of 2018, that a lot of those seats are being defended by Democrats in this cycle, and a lot of those seats are Democrat seats held in areas that Trump did well in 2016. So the pressure was more at the Senate level on Democrats, certainly. At the congressional level, the House level, pressure is very much on Republicans. You've seen a lot of Republicans step down, a lot of incumbents. We mentioned just two in our case here, just around us in the 5th and 6th districts of Virginia. Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, stepping down. So there are a lot of Republicans saying, yeah, we're good with this. And that means open seats. Open seats are more up for grabs. And there are a number of Republican seats in districts that Hillary Clinton did well in 2016 that Republicans held that are up for that as well. So And so what that suggests is, I think it's safe to call, and you're seeing a lot of pundits call this way, House is likely going to go Democratic. The Senate's likely going to stay Republican. But, you know, there is wiggle room both ways, largely on the Democratic side, to see some movement therein.
So let's look maybe a little bit at the Tim Kaine-Corey Stewart race. You said that you believe that will be won by 20 points at least for Tim Kaine. Is there any possibility of wiggle room there, you know, with the strong turnout at polling precincts across the state? Do you see that more as being more Democrats turning out, more Republicans turning out? Could Corey Stewart win this? There hasn't been a lot of polling done in this election, and I think it's because most people assume that Tim Kaine is up by as much as he is. That being said, you know, just like Trump surprised many people getting elected, could we be in for a surprise in Virginia with between Tim Kaine and Corey Stewart?
But Trump didn't do well in Virginia 2 years ago. And I would suggest that heavy turnout in Virginia would be a Democratic wave kind of sign. For example, in the 10th district, Jennifer Wexton in the House race against Barbara Comstock. Barbara Comstock, a very vulnerable Republican incumbent. Wexton's up in the polls between 10 and 15 points in that district. She's going to win that race, but that's a very vote-heavy area, not just percentages, but the number of votes in that 10th district are going to be tremendous. And so turnout there is going to be high. I imagine you're going to see a big Jennifer Wexton win in that race, and that's going to help Tim Kaine. There's other races contiguous to in the Northern Virginia area. Scott Taylor's district kind of butts there, and it also goes down into the Tidewater. He's in a close race. He's another Republican incumbent who's vulnerable, Elaine Luria, in that race. That's been a nip-and-tuck race the last couple of weeks. I mentioned the Cockburn-Denver-Riggleman race. That district's so weird. It goes down 29 from, I think it's Loudoun County, all the way down to Danville. I mean, that one almost touches both sides of the state, and it's a big state for that to be the case. But that race is a close one. And then Dave Bratt, another vulnerable Republican incumbent. He's in the 7th district, and that district kind of cuts in the middle. I mean, Crystal and I went to a concert a few weeks ago up in Manassas, and you drive 29, and you drive through like four congressional districts, and all these districts are right now nip and tuck races. But Dave Bratt challenged by Abigail Spanberger, and polls have either of those winning. So, and that district's a district drawn for Eric Cantor. If you remember Eric Cantor, he was a guy that people thought would be the next Speaker of the House. That was a very safe Republican district. So for that district to be, you know, a pick'em kind of battle tonight. So I think the when you see turnout, what's going to make those races close is going to be Democrats turning out and debate turnout. That's going to, you know, the races that aren't competitive are the ones that tend to be Southwest, South Side, where Republicans are safe. Those voters may not be as inclined. The Republican voters or Democratic voters in those parts may not be as inclined to come out. They're not as motivated. The races aren't as close. People in non-close races tend not to vote. You know, there's a tendency not to vote. So I think that will actually hurt Corey Stewart, the fact that you won't see as much interest in the parts of the state that he might otherwise do well in.
So we were talking about Bob Goodlatte choosing not to run for re-election, and Ben Klein, of course, handpicked by the Republican Party, who will very much vote very similarly to what Bob Goodlatte has voted in the past. And then you have relative newcomer Jennifer Lewis, who was known in Waynesboro and Augusta County circles because she has been involved in Democratic politics for some time. However, she wasn't known, you know, throughout the district. And so she is a relative newcomer and a newcomer to politics. This week, Augusta Free Press endorsed Jennifer Lewis to run in the race. What were the reasons why you feel like she would be the best choice for our district?
Well, we do have a dog in this fight, so to speak. I mean, we are liberal Democrats. That's there's no apologies for that. And if you don't like that, you don't have to keep listening. From a policy standpoint, we stand for universal health care. We stand for public education, and we stand for economic development for the middle class. And on those issues, Jennifer Lewis is on the right side. She supports Medicare for all. People listening to this podcast, people who listen to podcasts tend to be better off financially. So I'm probably not talking to you, but you may know somebody who doesn't have health insurance. You may know somebody who has health insurance they can't afford to use. There are tens of millions of Americans in both those categories. Universal health care takes that problem away. This America today, the life expectancy is lower than it was for our parents' generation. We have the best healthcare system in the world in terms of research and ability to deliver, but we don't deliver because we can't figure out the economics of it. Medicare for All takes care of that. Jennifer Lewis will support that. Ben Klein supports the status quo, and you can't tell me what the Republican status quo is on healthcare except for support the health insurance companies that take money from us that don't deliver healthcare. Education. Jennifer Lewis is a strong supporter of public education at the pre-K level, the K through 7 level, the middle school level, the high school level, all the way to college. She supports the free tuition initiatives sponsored by Bernie Sanders, among others. That's a way to make education. Education is something that made me a better person. I came from a trailer park, and you came from a hard scrabble background as well, Crystal. I mean, we don't succeed in an environment where you take money from public education like Ben Klein and Republicans want to do and give it to people who already can afford to send their kids to private school. The private school system just cannot accommodate a massive influx of people, and it doesn't choose to. It chooses to have smaller class sizes. We work with Fishburne Military School, and a big selling point for Fishburne Military School and lots of schools like that is small class sizes. We have a small environment. It's a very nurturing environment. Public schools don't have that ability. They have to cram 25 kids into a classroom. And so the infrastructure is just not there for private schools to grow anymore. They don't want to grow anymore. They want to do what they're doing. So she's right on that issue. And the economic policies of the Republicans are simply to give tax breaks to wealthy people and hope that that somehow trickles down. Whereas Democrats, and Jennifer Lewis among them, support investing in communities, investing in technology, and making the jobs of the future possible. All Republicans do is tell you jobs, not mine. So from a editorial standpoint, from a policy standpoint, we support Jennifer Lewis on all those initiatives. Now I'll put the political analyst hat back on. The 6th District's not drawn for a Democrat to do well in, and it's very hard to see Jennifer Lewis doing much better than 40% in this race.
And that was going to be my next question as far as what you anticipated here. And when we look at the local races, when we look at statewide, and when we look at nationwide, like, what are your expectations for today? Obviously, there are a lot of strong supporters for Jennifer Lewis, but as you said, the district is stacked against her. We both said this morning we thought that she would likely draw in 40% of the vote. How have previous candidates done in the same district? And I know that they were running against Bob Goodlatte, who had been in office for some time, but how have previous candidates done, and do you expect her to do better than them?
I said 38 to 40%, and I would say if she gets a 4 as the first number in her percent total, that's indicative of a Democratic wave that would be reflective of something bigger nationwide. This district, Goodlatte, I think in his first race in 1992, I think he was right at 60%, so his opponent was just short of 40% in that race, and that was in an open seat. Now, that seat had been held for 10 years by a Democrat, a D in name only, Jim Olin, and no offense to him at all, but he was very much a very conservative Democrat, held that seat for 10 years. But the 6th District has gone Republican dating back to before what was called the Byrd Machine era of Virginia, when Southern Democrats ruled, and the Southern Democrats were very, very conservative. In fact, you know, they became Republicans over time. But even in that era, the 6th District was Republican. And it was sort of a mountain, what we call, what Emmett Hanger calls, Emmett State Senator Emmett Hanger has been a state senator from this area for over 20 years, Mountain Valley Republicans. You know, they're not those national Republicans largely. They're more libertarian type Republicans. And so just leave government out of my life kind of Republicans. And so this area has long-standing Republican ties. Again, different Republican ties, and you're talking about now Trump kind of Republican ties. But that all said, there's an aversion to Democrats in the 6th District, largely. The 6th District doesn't have a really big city. Roanoke is on one edge of the district, but the district goes from Roanoke-Salem all the way up to just near Winchester, Front Royal area. So it's a big, big area geographically. A lot of cows live in this district, and I like to say that because it's the same thing as the 5th District. You drive by a lot of farmland, and farmers tend not to vote Democratic, more culturally than policy-wise, but anyway. So it's a tough sled for Jennifer Lewis in this district. That's casting no aspersions at her campaign. I'll give her credit. I've seen a lot of TV commercials for her in the last few days. Those are expensive. You have to raise money to put those on TV. I saw one running during the football game last night, one running during Monday Night Raw last night. Those are not inexpensive. We run a marketing company. We know how much those commercials cost. She had Tim Kaine campaigning with her 3 days last week. Tim Kaine's not wasting his time if he doesn't think it's going to help. he's not going to put his time out there if she's in the 20s in the polls, in internal polls. So they think that, you know, spending time with her in the district 3 days last week was going to help in some way. But it's going to be tough for her. But you look nationwide, to answer the other part of your question. The various analyses I looked at this morning, the final renderings, I guess, had Democrats taking the House with anywhere between 232 to 259 seats. They need 218 for a majority. So it seems like even the low end of that still gives them a real small but healthy majority. There are a lot of close races, and we see a lot of these in Virginia. At the Senate level, it looks likely that Republicans might even gain a seat. Right now it's a 51-49 split. They could. Most analyses have it at a 52-48 after the election today. But also, I mean, right now, I think everybody would agree that in terms of seats that are not up for election this year, plus those that feel safe Republican and those that feel safe Democrat, it'd be 50-45 with five toss-ups. Democrats have the lead in all those five toss-ups. When people say they think that Republicans will either have 51 or 52, they're saying, the statisticians are saying, it's hard to imagine Democrats running the table and winning all five of those races. But I wrote some numbers down on those five races. John Tester in Montana, he's got the lead in the polls. In Michigan, Stabenow got the lead in the polls. In Indiana, which is a Republican seat, Braun has a lead, but it's 1 or 2 points in all the polls that I'm looking at. In Arizona, that open seat, McSally has a lead, but again, 1 or 2 points in those polls. You look at Florida, Nelson has a pretty healthy lead, the Democratic incumbent there. Missouri, McCaskill, actually, as much as she's under fire, has a small but healthy lead in her race. Nevada, it looks like Heller is in trouble. Rosen looks like he has enough of a lead to say, could be an interesting election night out there. Texas, you know, all the talk, liberals listen, you know, if you're listening in, you like Beto O'Rourke, it's not likely he's going to beat Ted Cruz. I'll break some bad news there for you. But West Virginia, Joe Manchin, looks like he's got a small but healthy lead. In Tennessee, Blackburn and Bredesen, the Taylor Swift effect. It's a tie race. I mean, I would call that a tie race. The last couple polls I saw had that tied. So how much do the Swifties have an influence on that race, right?
Well, you know, and truthfully, celebrities across the board, because you saw Oprah Winfrey get out and other celebrities knocking on doors.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was pretty fascinating to see that, you know, people are stepping up and getting involved. And I guess around 8 o'clock tonight, we'll know what kind of impact that had on some of these races. You know, will there be upsets? Will there be races that you say probably are not going to shift? That just might. You know,
right.
Time will tell. I know that there was definitely an emphasis on getting a lot of young people registered to vote. Taylor Swift, what you're talking about with her, that very much was directed at her younger audience and getting people registered to vote. Time will tell. I guess we'll know a lot more this evening. Any final notes you want to make before we wrap up our Election Day podcast predictions?
As much as we talk about the efforts to get voters to come out to vote, we also have to talk about the efforts on the part of Republicans to suppress the vote. In the Georgia governor race, for example, Stacey Abrams against Kemp down there. Kemp's the Secretary of State, which controls the elections. He announces late Sunday night he's launching some investigation into Democratic Party efforts to hack the election system, which we all know is utter BS. It's just a tactic. You had Donald Trump yesterday tweet about criminal penalties for people who vote illegally. I mean, you know, all this stuff about this caravan that's supposedly coming up here to take over Smith Mountain Lake and other places in America. You know, that this caravan of poor, bedraggled women and their kids and a few men in this group, they're not even to Mexico City yet. But, you know, they're scaring the old folks into going out and voting because they might knock on their door if they get here by Election Day. The idea that it's just amazing. So, you know, they're trying to keep blacks from voting. They're trying to keep Latinos from voting. They're trying to scare us into, you know, even people like you and I trying to belittle us as well and tell us that we better watch our backs. And so, you know, don't as much as we want to talk about the celebrities and the get out the vote efforts and everything else, there are efforts to keep democracy down. And, you know, I'll give Republicans credit in this one respect. The demographic numbers of America aren't in y'all's favor. You're still listening to this podcast. They're not in your favor, and you know that. You know, your folks are dying off every day. I hate to be mean about that, but the Fox News generation is dying off, and the hateful people who vote Republican for hate reasons are going away every day. But you still maintain control of the political system, and here's how you do it. You, at the House of Delegates level in Virginia, the State Senate level in Virginia, you elect Republicans. Democrats don't pay attention at those races enough. And that's been the case across the country. That's how in Virginia, which has elected a senator in the last, what, this, the last three Senate races have gone Democratic. This one's going to go overwhelmingly Democratic. The last three presidential races have gone Democratic. The last two statewide elections, Democrats have swept. But in Virginia, it's an 8-3 split at the congressional level for Republicans. Now, how does a state that sends Democrats everywhere else have an 8-3 split in Republicans? Because they put all of our people in one district, and actually three districts in Virginia. They put them all in those three districts. And then they sprinkle the rest of the Republicans all over those other eight. And that's being done across the country. So Democrats are to be faulted for not having sense to run at the local level, to win those elections, to redraw the districts every 10 years. And I'll give Republicans credit. And they're playing the system as well as they can. They're holding off. They've got their finger in the wall trying to hold the water back. And they're doing as best they can doing so. I don't know that today changes that. But I think if Democrats get the House, which looks like it's likely, at least if Democrats get the House, that can forestall enough of the stupidness that's been going on in D.C. the last couple of years. Certainly, Donald Trump has a sweat for the next 2 years because you give House Democratic Committee Chairman investigatory powers. That will make for an interesting 2 years. If the Senate comes Democrats' way, which I can't bet on that. I don't rule out the possibility Democrats can win the Senate, but if they do, then all bets are off for the next 2 years. So Republicans are holding on. They're kind of like the mountain climber who doesn't have equipment, and you got a couple fingers hanging on the ledge. You might still be there. You might have one finger left after tonight, but a couple years is going to go away.
All right. So just to wrap up, thanks to Chris Graham for all his insight into the election. Today, of course, is election day. Until 7 p.m. tonight, you can go out and vote. Just a quick note, I did notice that a lot of public transportation is offering free rides to the polls. If anybody needs a ride to go out and vote, Uber, Lyft, and even locally here, Bright Services are providing free rides to the polls.
And also for our listeners in the Charlottesville Area Transit also doing that. We've had stories in Augusta Free Press about the Bright Bus here in Augusta County, Stanton, Waynesboro. Also that Charlottesville Area Transit, which also has some stops in Albemarle County. So for our local readers, those two areas you can get rides to the polls through those means.
And if you don't know how to do that, definitely check with your local registrar or your local party, Democrat or Republican, and they can likely give you information on how to get a ride to the polls. Because, of course, the most important thing is that you get out and vote today. I actually went out and voted about 9:30 this morning. I was voter number 643 at Ward B in Waynesboro. And just a quick shout-out, too, there were several volunteers there from Fishburne Military School opening the doors and, giving you your I Voted sticker. And of course, Chris mentioned earlier, they're one of our clients, and it's always good to see them out in the community participating in the election process. They're probably not old enough to vote but certainly glad to have them out in the community.
Give them an opportunity to see the process up close and personal, and it's a great opportunity for those kids to learn. It is neat, and as a high school kid, I would have loved that opportunity.
Absolutely. So it's great to see them out there. Again, around 8 o'clock tonight, you should start seeing results flowing through Augusta Free Press. Be sure to check our Augusta Free Press Facebook page. We'll be reporting numbers from the State Board of Elections. And also be sure to follow us on AugustaFreePress.com both today and tomorrow for election results both locally as well as nationwide.
Yeah, Crystal's taking over the politics desk tonight because I'll be at the UVA basketball game, which starts at 7 o'clock, which means when the election returns are coming in, I'm watching basketball. But I'll be paying attention at least somewhat to the election results as well. And, of course, we'll have some wrap-up kind of stuff, both from the basketball game but also from the elections later tonight on AFP.
All right. For Augusta Free Press and Chris Graham, I'm Crystal Graham. Thanks for joining us for this Election Day Prediction Podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more insight on the 2018 elections.